O Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 24, Text Number 47. Janaha Abhuta Ayam Nija Karma Bandhana Sukha Ichaya Karma Semihate Yat Sevaya Tam Vidunoti Asatmatim Grantim Bindyat Sa Na Guru Jano Budo Yam Nija Karma Bandhana Suke Chaya Karma Samihate Sukam Yat Sevaya Tam Vidunot Yasanmatem Grantim Sabbinyad Vridayam Sano Guru Jano Budo Yam Nija Karma Bandhana Suke Chaya Karma Samihate Sukam Yat Sevaya Tam Vidunot Yasanmatim Kritim Sabinyad Vridayam Sano Guru Jano Budo Yam Nija Karma Bandhana Suke Chaya Karma Samihate Sukam Yat Sevaya Tam Vidunot Yasanmatim Kritim Sabinyad Vridayam Sano Guru
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Janaha, the conditioned soul subjected to birth and death. Abhura, most foolish because of accepting the body as the self. Ayam, he. Nija karma bandhana, accepting different bodily forms as a result of his sinful activities. Sukha ichaya, desiring to be happy within this material world. Karma, fruit of activities. Samihate, plans. Asukam, but it is for distress only. Yatsevaya, by rendering service unto whom? Tam, the entanglement of karma, vidunoti, clears up. Asatmatim, the unclean mentality, accepting the body as the self. Grantim, hard knot. Sa, his lordship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Binjat, being cut off. Ridayam, in the core of the heart. Sa, he, the Lord. Na, our. Guru, the Supreme Spiritual Master. Purport and translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. In hopes of becoming happy in this material world, the foolish conditioned soul performs fruitive activities that result only in suffering. But by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from such false desires for happiness. May that Supreme Spiritual Master cut the knot of false desires from the core of my heart. Report. For material happiness, the conditioned soul involves himself in fruitive activities which actually put him into material distress. Because the conditioned soul does not know this, he is said to be in avidya or ignorance. Because of a false hope for happiness, the conditioned soul becomes involved in various plans for material activity. Here, Maharaj Satyavrata prays that the Lord sever this hard knot of false happiness and thus become his supreme spiritual master. Om Agnatanamandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So Srila Prabhupada says here in his purport that because of a false hope for happiness, the conditioned soul becomes involved in various plans for material activity. So this verse is talking about how the foolish conditioned soul is hoping to become happy in the material world as a result of performing material activities. And Prabhupada is pointing out here in his purport that it's a false hope. But the thing is this, that the living entity has to have some hope. You know, you can't live without hope. It's like it's a condition of being alive. Just like there's a verse in the a phrase in the Vedanta Sutra, Anandamaya Abhyasat. The living entity is always hankering after happiness. And it's just like it's the nature. It's the nature of the soul. It's always hankering after happiness. It always has some hope for happiness. So the point is that if your hope for happiness is not in Krishna, then your hope for happiness is going to be in the material world. And that's the condition of the situation of the conditioned soul, that their hope for happiness is in matter, maya. You see? And of course, it's a false hope, because you're not going to find. The whole thing is set up in such a way that there's no possible way that you can find happiness in the material energy. It's just like there's no possible way that you're going to find happiness in if you go to prison, because it's set up to punish you. And they're going to make sure you have a miserable time there. So you learn that, no, this is not a place where you want to be, and you've got to behave yourself and be a good citizen. So it's the same thing. So the point is that, so it's clearly saying here that this hope of being happy in the material world is a false hope. So we should put our hope in Krishna. We should put our hope in Krishna. Our hope for happiness, and we have to have a hope, because you can't live. You know, actually, this Papa quotes sometimes, he quoted Shakespeare, so I'll quote William Blake. William Blake said, "Hope springs eternal from the human breast." He was right. He was right. It's just the way it is. Hope springs eternal from the human breast. There's going to be hope, so we should put our hope for happiness in Krishna. Putting our hope for happiness in Krishna means... which is what it just means believing in the statements that we're hearing day and night. You know, day and night. All these different things we're hearing about the philosophy. It just means believing in those things and then constantly reminding yourself of that and actually trying to have those thoughts, those ideas be the guiding principles of your life. It's like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that famous picture of the horses. And each one of the horses represents a different one of the senses. And then the reins of the mind. And then there's a weak, scared lady in the driver's seat. And an even more scared lady in the passenger seat. So the idea is this, that the mind is always trying to squirm out of surrendering. It's always trying to wiggle out of it. Even when you decide to become a devotee, and the mind is going, okay, we could do this surrender thing, but let's do it within reason. I mean, don't become a fanatic about this surrender. Let's do it all within reason. But and it's the intelligence, the duty or the function of the intelligence is to constantly be, directing, not giving in to the mind and not. I'm the intelligence. It's to put the mind in its place, and the best way to put the mind in its place is the intelligence has to gravitate, take shelter of the statements of the Shastra. And not this morning, but in previous mornings, we're hearing Suvas read from the Bhagavatam second canto, and it's making that point that these statements of the Shastra, they're meant to be taken literally. It's actually, this is absolute truth. This is where we put our faith in the statements of the Shastra, that this is absolutely true. And so the function of the intelligence is that we have to constantly be, directing, constantly be reminding ourselves of these statements in the Shastra and just pushing them right in front of the mind and directing our own lives on the basis of these statements of the Shastra. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about, because it might sound kind of abstract to this point. This is an excerpt from a lecture that Prabhupada gave. I neglected to make a note of where and when. So Prabhupada says, "So we can enjoy Krishna's loving service in so many ways, not only by the embrace of the gopis, but in the fight of Bhishma with Krishna and his piercing body with arrows. Therefore, Krishna is Akila Rasamrita. There are 12 rasas, either primary rasa or secondary rasa. Krishna is ready to respond to any rasa you want to deal with Krishna. Okay, now it starts getting good, okay? That is Krishna's position. Kama, krodat, bayat, dvaisat. So what to speak of those who are loving? Just like Putana. Putana wanted to kill Krishna. That was her purpose. But when Putana was killed by sucking her breast and life both, then Putana was given the position of Krishna's mother. Because Krishna took it, Krishna took the bright side. Krishna thought that, whatever her intention may be, she came to me just like a mother, and I sucked her breast. Therefore, she is my mother. Prabhupada now speaking. She came as enemy, but Krishna did not take the inimical side, the motherly side. Tejiyasam nadoshaya. Similarly, the gopis, they came to Krishna out of lust, but out of lust they became purified. Just like the sun. The sun soaks the water from a urinal, but the sun is not polluted, but the urinal becomes sterilized. This is the process. So try to understand Krishna some way or other. Then your life is successful. It doesn't matter. Kamat, krodat, bayat, dvesat, and goes on. What to speak of those who are constantly engaged in love with Krishna? And Prabhupada goes, everything is love. As soon as you divert your attention to Krishna, that is love. It may be perverted, just like Kamsa. Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna. He was also Krishna conscious, but he was thinking in terms of killing Krishna as an enemy. So this is not bhakti. This is not anukul, pratikul. But still, Krishna is so kind that Kamsa was also given liberation. This is the special kindness of Krishna. So any rasa, there are 12 rasas. Yena tena prakarena mana krishna navesayad. This is the direction given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Some way or other, fix up your mind in Krishna, then your life is successful. Some way or other, yena tena. So if your mind is fixed up always in Krishna, then your senses will also be engaged in Krishna's service, because mind is the center of all activities and senses. So the reason I heard that in a lecture, and I made a couple notes, you know, a few words there, that so I could look it up on the Vedabase. I found it on the Vedabase, and I printed it out. And in case you're wondering, well, what the heck is Bhrigupati doing? He's always carrying around these papers. What is this guy? The reason I do that is I'm trying to constantly remind myself of certain, you know, qualities, certain things about Krishna. And the reason I carry this one around, for instance, because it's reminding me about, you know, the mercy of Krishna and how great the mercy of Krishna is. Here it's describing Krishna was merciful to Putana. Putana came to kill him. You know, she came to kill him, and what happened? She got liberation. She got Vatsalya Ras. He said that Krishna is so merciful that even somebody who was inimical to him got his mercy. And then a more extreme example is given, if you actually stop and think about it. And we are supposed to stop and think about these things, by the way. Prabhupada said, study my purports scrutinizingly. And that means not just his purports, but his words. You know, his lectures, study it scrutinizingly. From every different angle of vision. That's another expression that Prabhupada used. And by doing that, you become more absorbed, and you more deeply understand the meaning of these things. Okay, so now doing that, this next example is a more extreme example. Because Kamsa, Putana just came to kill Krishna. And she was kind of put up to it. You know, Kamsa sent her, basically, to do the job. And she actually even for a second there appreciated Krishna. If you remember in the Krishna book, she looked at Krishna, and her first reaction was, oh my God, this child is as powerful enough to destroy the entire universe, right? And she kind of appreciated Krishna, but I don't know, she couldn't, her nature got the better of her, or she had that order from Kamsa, but she went ahead and, you know, tried to do what she was there to do. But so she was very sinful, you know. But Kamsa, if you stop and think about it, Kamsa was way more sinful. For starters, he's putting all these demons up to that. You know, he sent Putana, he sent Keshi, he sent Agassa. You know, he put all these other demons up to killing Krishna. Kamsa was constantly thinking about how to kill Krishna. He was thinking of Krishna, but he was thinking how to kill Krishna. Not only did Kamsa try to kill Krishna, but Kamsa tried to kill Krishna's mother, father, foster mother, his biological mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki. Kamsa tried to kill his foster parents, Maharaj Nanda and Yasoda, at the sacrificial arena right there at the end. Remember when Krishna defeated the wrestlers? And then at one point, Kamsa just totally lost it. And he stood up and he said, this is it. You know, you kill Vasudev and Devaki and kill this Nanda Maharaj and, you know, for his cunning behavior. And he just went berserk and he was, you know. So basically, Kamsa was wanted to kill Krishna, his brother, and all his friends and relatives. And anything that Krishna, that was sacred and important to Krishna, the cows, the Brahmins, Kamsa wanted to kill them too. Kamsa was like as big a demon as you could possibly get. Right? Okay. And what happened to him? He got, if I'm remembering correctly, he got Sarupya Mukti. He didn't just get Sayuja Mukti. Right? He didn't just merge into Krishna's effulgence or anything like that. He got, right? Am I right? I'm looking over to you. He got Sarupya Mukti, which is, you know, he got liberation and a personal liberation of Vaikuntha planet. Now, somebody might say, well, and I asked this question, probably, hopefully everybody was here a couple of days ago for the wonderful class that was given by Devamrita Swami. And I asked, how could Kamsa possibly get Krishna's mercy? And he gave the answer, well, because, you know, it's in the seventh canto, Narada Muni also was, Yudhisthira Maharaj asked that question to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni was, saying, well, you know, because he was just so intensely absorbed in thought of Krishna. Okay? And I thought, well, that's, of course, that's the correct answer. Shastrically, that's the correct answer. But stop and think about it, okay? Say somebody is trying to kill you, okay? They're trying to kill you. They're trying to kill your mother and your father. They're trying to kill your sisters, your brothers, your friends, and everything that means, is of any importance and means anything to you. And then you hear that, you know, how would you feel about them? You'd feel like really inimical towards them, right? But then I said to you, but wait a second, that person's always thinking about you. Of course, they're always thinking about how to kill you, but they're always thinking about you. Would that make any difference to you? You follow what I'm saying? That wouldn't make any difference to me. If I had somebody that was trying to kill me, my mother, my father, my brother, my sister, all my friends, all my relatives, and everything that was important to me, and then somebody's pointed out to me that, wait a second, you know, this person's always thinking of you. I'd say, so what? You know, I would want that person not only killed, but punished in the life after, right? And Kamsa, not only did he not get, he got killed, okay, he got killed by Krishna, but did he get punished? No, he got rewarded. This is like amazing. Stop and think about this. He got rewarded. And not only did he get just, he didn't just get any old reward, he got like the supreme reward practically. I mean, you know, he could have gone to Goloka Vrindavan, but he went to Vaikuntha planet, he got Sarupya Mukti. So, this is Krishna, how merciful Krishna is. And I, so getting back to my original point is, so, you know, I, when I hear something like this, I try to zero in on it. And so, because, you know, there's that expression, in one ear, out the next, in one ear, out the other. So we have to try to prevent that from happening. You know, Krishna consciousness, I remember one of the first Bhagavatam classes I heard was actually given by Kirtananda Prabhu, who in his day gave some really great classes, and he made this point that trying to become Krishna conscious is like swimming upstream. You know, if you've been to Mayapur and you've jumped in the Ganges during the festival time, then you know what trying to swim upstream is like. It's hard. It's hard, and it's pretty much, you don't, can't do it. So it's like that. You know, we always have to be striving to remember Krishna, because the nature of the material energy is going to try to rob us. You know, the material energy is going to try to, you know, rob us of our opportunities to remember Krishna. So when you hear something like that, don't just think, oh, well, yeah, that's nice, and yeah, and I'll remember that. And then you, 30 seconds later, it's gone. It might be gone for years until you're fortunate enough to hear it again, because if you're listening to a lecture or something like that. No, just remember a few words. Go to the Veda base, you know. Do a search. Everybody should know how to do this, you know. Do a word search on that phrase. Find it. Print it. You know, put it in a plastic case and remember it. And if you're lucky, if you're fortunate, like Archie, he's got a good memory. I'm always so impressed, you know. He sits down and he just rattles off verses, you know, all the verses that I want to know, somehow or another, they stick in his head. And they don't stick in mine, even after I practice them repeatedly, you know, over years and years and years. But so if you're very fortunate like that, that you really can remember these things, congratulations, you know, Vandabhat Pranams, like that. But if you're not, if you're kind of more like in my category, this is a good practice. You know, you could just do something like this. But somehow or another, yes, that's what the instruction is here, Rupa Goswami. He says, Yena tena prakarena mana krishna navesaya, that somehow or another, fix your mind upon Krishna. Okay. So anyway, so that's it's a good thing to do that. Because why? Because it's, as I said, getting back to the another previous point, this is helping your intelligence. This is the way to use your intelligence. The way to use your intelligence is to try to come up with a lot of ammunition to combat the mind. You know, this is reminding me about how merciful Krishna is. And then I have my different phrases where I'll remind myself about how, you know, powerful Krishna is, or how Krishna is omniscient. Like my favorite one to remind myself how powerful Krishna is in the chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's text 5 in the purport. Prabhupada says in the Nirukti dictionary, and it gives this, you know, Sanskrit, and it says, it's talking about how Krishna, his determination is itself actual fact. And then in the Prabhupada's comment on that, he says, we may think of doing something, but it's not always possible to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything happens so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. See? So in other words, I just kind of try to remember these things, remind myself of these things, and put it all together. Because when you put it all together, what you get is, as Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. You see, you know, it's like sometimes we're thinking, oh, you know, I'm a devotee, I'm this kind of person, and I can only do this much. Because I'm this kind of person, I've got this kind of body, I've got this kind of background, and I can, no, garbage, nonsense, you know. Krishna consciousness means, Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. You know, for somebody who surrenders to Krishna, I mean, at least theoretically, I mean, I'm just talking logically on the basis of logic and scripture here, there's no limit. You know, Krishna can do anything. And if we surrender to Krishna, we could do anything. I'm going to slow down, stop up, and back up a little bit. Okay. Yeah, on one hand, you have Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. He's unlimitedly powerful. Okay? Then you have that. Another one is that Krishna, he's unlimitedly knowledgeable. He knows everything. And then you have Krishna, that he's unlimitedly merciful. Okay, so you put those three together. What is the problem? Now, you surrender to Krishna. Krishna, he knows that you're trying to be his devotee. He knows that you're trying to surrender to him, that you're praying to him, and that you're really sincerely trying to take shelter of him. He's unlimitedly merciful. He's, you know, he's bhaktivatsal, right? He's always favorably inclined to his devotees. So he wants to help you. So he knows you want the help. He wants to help you. Can he help you? Yeah. He's unlimitedly powerful. See, so, you know, that combination, you can't go wrong. So that's why I'm saying, started off by saying we should put our hope for everything, for happiness, for success, for everything in Krishna. You know, and cultivate that. It's a cultivation. It's not just like a one-time thought or something like that. It's got to be a constant cultivation. You've got to constantly be using your intelligence to remind yourself just these things, even if nothing else, just these three basic points. That Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's unlimitedly powerful. His determination is itself, his actual fact. He's unlimitedly aware, knowledgeable. He knows everything. He Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, he knows the psychic movements of every living entity. See, so Krishna understands, Bhava Grihi Janardhan, he understands when we're, you know, trying to, you know, think and pray to him and take shelter of him and pray for his mercy and desiring his help, you know, desiring to make advancement in spiritual life. He understands that, okay? And he's unlimitedly merciful. So you just kind of, you know, remind yourself of those things and just go for it. You know, just constantly try to, you know, use the intelligence to bring that to the forefront of your awareness, and then, you know, just direct your life according to those ideas. So I lost my train of thought there for a second. Yeah, and if we do like that, then our lives will be a success. And the Shastra has success stories. You know, just this morning when I was, chanting, I was preparing for the class, and I remember this verse just popped into my head, which I hadn't thought about for I don't know how many years, but it just popped into my head, and I said, why? But then after I thought about it, I realized why. Krishna put it in there. Let's see if I can remember it now. Now it's not popping. It's not popped out of my head. It's going to pop in a second. Hang on. It's maybe I'll need some help here. It's Yamunacharya. And it's the verse where he's talking about it. How does it start off? Yeah. Yadavari Krishna Chaita, Yadavari Mama Chaita Krishna Padada Vinde, Navanava Rasa Daman Yujitam Ratamasit, Tadavari Bata Nadi Sangyame Smaryamane, Bhavati Mukhivikara Susti Nistivanam Cha. There, pop back in again. So, Yamunacharya, he's saying that he was a king, okay? And Prabhupada quotes that first, and he tells the story. He was a king. He had everything. He had any kind of sense gratification he wanted, he could have it. He was a king, okay? But he is, expressing that, but when I became a devotee of Krishna, I've surrendered to Krishna. I've taken shelter of Krishna, and, everybody, when you hear this verse, usually you think of it in relation to sex life, because there's that last line. Every time I think of sex life, I spit at the thought of it. Okay, that's good. That's nice. That's he's very renounced. But the thing that attracts me on that verse is that part about navanava rasa dama yujitam rantamasit, that ever-increasing pleasure. In other words, that's why he was able to do that. Why is it that he's, when he ever thinks of sex life, he's spitting at the thought of it? Not because he's some sort of crazy fanatic or something like that, or just some sort of sour grapes guy. No. He's experiencing the nectar of Krishna consciousness. He's meditating on Krishna. I don't know whether he's chanting Hare Krishna or what his devotional service was, but whatever it was working, because he was experiencing new pleasure at every moment, thinking of Krishna. He was intensely absorbed in thought of Krishna and getting the result, experiencing the desired result. He was experiencing transcendental pleasure. He was relishing the nectar of thinking of Krishna. And as a result of that, he wasn't at all interested in material activities. No false hope. Right? And this verse is talking about how the conditioned soul has this false hope for material happiness. So that's the way to become free from the false hope. When you take shelter of the real hope, when you take shelter of Krishna, when you take shelter of devotional service, as we're hearing about it, from these books, and really go for it. It's not just, as I said, it's not a casual thing. You got to really go for it. You got to go for this as much as or more than anything you've ever gone for in your entire life. If before you came to Krishna consciousness, you tried hard to be a this or a that, or just try to remember that. Whatever you tried your hardest for before you became a devotee in your lifetime, just remember that and try that harder or harder to try to become a pure devotee of Krishna. You see? And so that's what Yamunacharya did, and he got the result. He got Krishna's mercy, and that's why he was able to become detached like that. And that's the only way. There's that verse, second chapter, Bhagavad Gita, Vishayavani Vartante, Nihahadasya Dehina, Rasavars and Masopiascha, Padam Drishtavanavartate, that the embodied soul may be restricted from sense gratification, but the taste still remains. So that's useless. I mean, it's not useless. It's a something. You got to do that. It's part of the package. It's part of the overall process. But it's not sufficient in and of itself to become, to extricate yourself from what's being described here. This, the foolish conditioned soul performs fruitive activities. You're not going to be able to become free from the inclination to perform fruitive activities just by restraining from those activities. Not sufficient. You see? But then it goes on to say, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, then he becomes fixed in consciousness. You got to have that higher taste. You got to, as it says here in the purport, by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from such false desires for happiness. Rendering service. You have to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, experience the higher taste, and then we can become free from the false desires for happiness. And I'll just make one last point, which I've already kind of made, but just in conclusion and then end. Is that devotional service is of course all the activities we perform throughout the day and everything like that, but Prabhupada said, I remember one lecture Prabhupada said, devotee means mind. So it's really important, and I read it here. Rupa Goswami said that is the direction given by Rupa Goswami. Some way or another, fix up your mind in Krishna. Then your life is successful, some way or another. And then Prabhupada goes, so if your mind is fixed up always in Krishna, then your senses will be also engaged in Krishna's service. Because the mind is the center of all activities of the senses. So this is what I wanted to emphasize this morning. Somehow or another, we have to fix up our mind. I gave a suggestion. I mean, to be honest with you, this is what I do. This is one way in which I try to fix my mind on Krishna by, remembering, making note of things I hear that are meaningful to me and inspiring. Like yesterday, Rabindranath was reading from the Bhagavatam down in breakfast, And he read this one thing about the importance of deity worship, and it talked about Shalagram Shila worship at home. So my wife worships Shalagram Shilas at home. So I mean, okay, what was the reference? I had to bug him about two or three times. He got annoyed because he was reading. I kept him through. But I had a reason. I had a reason why I wanted to know that, because, you know, I didn't want to lose it. I wanted him. So as soon as I got home, I grabbed the Bhagavatam, found it again, read it to my wife, you know, print it out. We'll post it up on the wall someplace. And, you know, this way, you kind of like, it's reinforcing. It's reinforcing. And that's very important to do. This is our chance. You know, when we're here at the temple, this is our chance. It's just like when you're in a war in the army. You know, when you're out in the battlefield, that's hard. When you're back at the base, that's when you got a chance to regroup and, you know, get yourself, you know, rest up and get your uniform, all your ammunition together and your weapons and this and that. See, because when you're out there in the battlefield, it's, you know, as the expression goes, no holds barred. So it's like that. Once you're out, it's harder. I'll give you an example. So you see what's up. For instance, in the morning when I'm here in the temple, I can remember Krishna. You know, I can think of Krishna. I can think of, you know, different past times, his form and this and that. It's an effort, but it's doable. But when I'm out on Sankirtan, hard. I'm just, because there's so many different things you're dealing with. You know, you're dealing with the people. You're dealing with your own body. You know, how you feel. Do you have the energy to do this? And then you're dealing with your mind. What's going on here today? Is the authorities going to come and kick me out of here? Or there's this or there's that. And, you know, there's so many different things you're dealing with. And then there's the actual trying to, you know, stop the person and give them the book and get them interested and get a donation. It's very hard. I don't think of Krishna. I mean, I wish I could think of Krishna. I know it's, in one sense, it's as good as thinking of Krishna, because, you know, if you're totally absorbed in your activity, that's not different from Krishna. But I'm not able to. I would love to try, but it just doesn't happen. You know, like that I'm doing it and I'm constantly, like, in the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, you know, just continue your activity of fighting and always remember me in the form of Krishna. Yeah, that's easier said than done, though. You know, try doing it. It's not, you got to really work at that. So the point I'm making is that Prabhupada, you know, he gave us this beautiful program. You know, he didn't tell us go out day and night and just preach. You have a morning program, go out and preach, come back, you know, see the deities, read the books, like that. And this way, you know, you can develop fortify your Krishna consciousness. So this is an important thing. You know, it's very important to try to, get into the philosophy and be absorbed in these things that Prabhupada's saying, and have them be the driving principle of our life. Just, anyway, I tried to give that example of, you know, this is what I do. And, I was trying to share it with everybody else. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions? Chandrasekhar Prabhu. Waiting for the microphone here.
Thank you, Prabhu. I have two short questions. One is regarding a word that you mentioned twice during your lecture, and that is fanaticism. Is there such a thing as fanaticism in Krishna consciousness? And if there is, how do we... Because we hear and we hope for full absorption, and, you know, we worship examples of devotees who are, we could say, extreme examples of absorption in Krishna consciousness, but we want that, we aspire for that, we worship that. So can we even speak of fanaticism in Krishna consciousness? And if we can, how is that defined?
Do you remember what context I used it in exactly?
You mentioned it at the very beginning.
In the mind. When the mind is saying, you know, let's do this within reason, don't be a fanatic.
And then with Yamunacharya.
Sorry?
And with Yamunacharya's example, his verse, Yadavani Mama Cheta.
Right. Well, I guess what I was thinking, and what probably is not a good idea, is you're doing something that's kind of like over your head. And as you don't have the realization, you just, you know, it's like, for me, fanatic would be, like Papa said, there's two words. See if I can remember. One is imitating, anu something, and the other one is imitating, and one is following in the footsteps. See? Yeah. So the idea is, when you're imitating, that's like fanaticism. You don't have the proper, You know, like it's for instance, to Haridas Thakur. Okay, let's take that as an example. Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. They were extremely renounced. But if somebody would try to follow their program, you know, imitating it, and they were oblivious to, you know, how that's, you know, affecting themselves and the people around them, and, you know, the kind of image it's, you know, presenting of our movement, that would be fanaticism. You know, you're not able to put the whole thing in perspective. You're not able to, you know, do it in a mature kind of a holistic sort of a way. But as opposed to following in the footsteps, which is understanding that, well, these were very, very renounced personalities. Let me try to be more renounced, not necessarily do the exact same thing they did, but let me, in my own life, and in a way that's appropriate for me, try to follow the principle, understand the principle there involved, and put that into practice in my life, and not just imitate their activity. That's the best I'd come up with. What was the other question?
It's regarding the mind and controlling the mind and always trying to, like, your whole class was about, you know, somehow or other getting the mind to think of Krishna. So it's, is there a chance that sometime in our life we'll get to a point where we're no longer fighting to get the mind to think of Krishna, but rather, because like right now we're kind of spontaneously attracted to sense gratification. It's like our default setting in our hard drive. Mm-hmm. As soon as we turn on our consciousness, boom, we go to sense gratification. And then we hear of the eternal residence of the spiritual world. Their you know, default settings is spontaneous attraction to Krishna. They can't help but have their mind on Krishna. So is there a chance, is there some sort of scope of...
Pallad Nandamaraj yesterday in class, he said at Nishta, you know, when you firm faith, Nishta, and there's a do shraddha tato sadhusanga tato bhajana kriya anartana vritti shat tato nishta. Nishta, and then ruchi, you have a taste. So at that stage, which is, you know, beyond the anartana vritti, then, because you have a taste, you're spontaneously attracted to devotional service to Krishna and devotional service to Krishna. So, yeah, it's you know, it's, you just gotta make a little bit more advancement. Archidapu.
But there's the mercy factor. It's not us against Maya. It's us with the help of Guru and Krishna against Maya. You alone against Maya, you have no chance. There is no chance. You cannot defeat Maya. And therefore, the process is surrender to Guru, do what Guru tells you to do. When Guru is pleased, then Krishna, trying to please his devotee, your Guru, pulls Maya back, pulls away the curtain so that you can see Krishna everywhere. Because that's the whole idea. Krishna is here, he's everywhere. Like Prabhupada says, you think you're sitting on the floor, I know I'm sitting on Krishna. So when you learn to see Krishna everywhere, then you're Krishna conscious. But there's a barrier that's preventing us from doing that. And that's our contaminated mind. So when we satisfy Guru, even in our contaminated state, going out and distributing his books, cleaning the temple, whatever it is that Guru asks you to do, if you do it and he's pleased, then the curtain gets pulled back by Krishna. That's how it works. It's not that our strength. It's the example of the monkey and the mother monkey and the kitten and the mother cat. The little monkey has to hold on for dear life when the mother's jumping from tree to tree, otherwise it's, forget it, it's over. So that's you trying to do it against Maya. The kitten just relaxes. Mom picks her up and takes her to the next place, and then she's safe. So that's the devotee process. Devotee process is rely on mom, dad, Krishna, and everything will happen. But you have to do something. Follow what the path that's been laid out, and then they'll be pleased. I had a quick question for you. I've always wanted to ask this, and I just want to ask it now.
Sure.
We know that you started out in New York working for Amala Bhakti. I always wondered, how did that happen? Did he put an ad in the paper and you responded, or did you know him socially, or how did you get to work for Amala Bhakti? Both you and Jovita were working for Amala Bhakti before you became devotees. How did that happen?
Well, I was interested in Hatha Yoga, and I used to, when I moved, I was going to school in Utica, New York, and I actually went to some yoga center up in Valmer in Canada, but I moved back down to New York and was living with my parents, so I just looked for a yoga center in New York area, and I found that. I don't know how I found that, but I just wandered in one day and there it was. And Dravida was, I think he was already doing it, and I used to sit with Dravida. Dravida and I were working on is Amal Bhakta still here? Because I don't want to embarrass him. But, okay. Yeah, I was working on a bootleg copy of the Ramayana. Amala Bhakta was putting out a bootleg copy of the Ramayana. And Dravida and I were working on it. We were sitting in, you know, right next to each other. And even back in those, and I was, he was doing the, he was editing, and I was doing layout work. Like I was copying, you know, the Devanagari or whatever it was, that, taking it out of the existing edition and pasting it up. You know, so even back in those days, Dravida used to go to me, "Hey Jeff, check, listen to this. Listen, no, leave me alone. I'm doing my work. Now listen to this." That was, he was Tom. I was Jeff. You know, and this is the same thing. I think he's, you know, from that that gives me the conviction that this guy was a devotee in his past life. Because even before we joined the movement, while we're sitting there in the room there editing Amala Bhakta's bootleg Ramayana, Dravida was trying to get me to listen to different passages from that, you know, well, listen to this, listen. Okay, what is it? What is it? Go ahead, you know. So that was pretty far out. But, yeah, that was, those were good times. And Krishna's brought us together again by his mercy. Okay. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.